phone, so. Yeah. So I'm not being entirely rude. All right. Thank you guys so much for coming. I hope you hope you're overwhelmed with information when you leave. I really do hope that you have more than you can handle. I mean, you'd rather have that than, man, I wish we had gone to another workshop. Thank you so much. My name is Jeffrey Reed. I've been in ministry for about 25 years as a pastor in kids ministry, about 15 of that. Started as a worship pastor, so it's been 25 years, yeah. Worship pastor, I've been a senior pastor, an executive pastor. Kids ministry is where it's at. So thank you guys for serving in kids ministry. I serve with the Lifeway Kids team in Nashville. They hired me about 3 years ago to be the director of Lifeway Kids, which is the largest organization, ministry organization to kids in the world, which is incredibly overwhelming. And so I'm also a family pastor at the Church of Spring Hill, south of Nashville. It's a church plant. So I've served in a mega church where we had 12 to 1,500 kids on a weekend, and now I serve in a church where you have 12 to 15 kids on a weekend. And so I've been lived in both worlds. And so this, what you'll take away today, really will apply to any size church, because it's not about the number of kids you have. It's about the connection that you can make with your parents that lead your kids. So let's talk through it really quick. I hope that three things happen today. One is I hope that you're inspired. I know that I'm preaching to the choir, but I hope that you're inspired and compelled to start things on Sunday, like to do things differently this Sunday. That's probably the easy part. The second part is I'm going to give you a lot of things you can do, tools. So you're going to take back a lot of ideas. You won't be able to use all of them, but there'll be a couple that I think you should really aim for. The third thing is that I can't help you with this. It's something you have to commit to, is to stick with it, because you might find out in a short term, this is really amazing, but you got to get other people on board with you, and you have to re-remind each other of how important this is down the road. So let's look at an illustration that I found. I was looking for something that really would illustrate the idea that we're talking about today. For a sprinter, the angle of the back and the position of the starting line is critical. The angle of the bent leg has to be just right. The position of the straighter leg also has to be right. And the initial push, the runner is almost horizontal to the ground. The position of the head is important. The length of the first steps is important. The position of the hands on the starting line is critical. The mental focus is critical. The ability to hear the gun, the reaction to the gun, the awareness of others in the race. And all of this happens in less than a half a second. And yet it is one of the most critical components of the race. And though not many races are won at the starting line, they're won throughout the course of it, most races are lost when the starter doesn't start out the way they need to using their technique. So what does this have to do with kids ministry? Well, the interaction that you have with parents is so brief and so seemingly small on a Sunday morning or on a Saturday night, could be the most critical and overlooked time in your ministry. And so just like that first half second that the runner has to do everything right, you should consider the value of that handoff time when you have kids in your ministry and you're handing them off to your parents. I'm going to talk for 30 minutes about 30 seconds, but I think when you go away, you're going to realize how important that time is. So let's talk about a few things before we jump into it. When do we get the chance to interact with our parents or guardians? Hey, come on in. There are a lot of opportunities in church. This is not devaluing those opportunities. In fact, you should do all of the above. They're just not as effective as what we're going to talk about in that 30 seconds. You might have parent workshops or gatherings. You might say, hey, we're getting all our parents together. We want to have a parent conference. We want to share what we do in our Sunday morning stuff with you. If you did this, a successful turnout would be 25 to 30%. You know this. Maybe half would show up. It's just, they just don't come. They don't want to come an extra time. And even if you had it after church, you would not have a big turnout because you have families that were there for the first service and went home. But this can happen, and this is fine. It's just not ideal. You might do it in passing in the hallways. You do get one-on-one time there, but you only get one-on-one time with a couple, if any, families. Before church, between services, after church, there might be interaction via phone or email. But if it's like it is with me, they rarely answer the phone, at least the first time. They want to make sure they know who it is, and then you're not sure if they read your email or not. least they tell you they didn't get one. Maybe social media. I don't know if you use social media. A lot of our parents are on it, but it's very inconsistent. So that is another realm that you might interact. Perhaps it's at drop-off events, like VBS is an annual event, and the parents are in the pool line. Maybe you interact with them there, but that's a chaotic time to have a conversation with the parent. But it is a time to interact. Those are all important. But possibly the most overlooked time is that 30-second window. Come on, I'm swiping. There we go. The 30-second window during pickup time at church could be the best opportunity to connect with parents. And so this whole time is to talk about how to make the most of that time. And so before we do, I just want to spend about 3 or 4 minutes talking about why I'm in children's ministry and why you are probably in children's ministry. So here are 5 reasons, and this is the final one. I'm going to get to that at the very end. The first is to see their hearts transformed by the good news of Christ. There are dozens of reasons I do kids' ministry. It's fun. I have fun. I like to see kids have fun. I like to see leaders lead kids. I like to develop leaders. This is the number one reason that I do kids' ministry, and every kids' pastor I've ever talked to, with hardly any exceptions, would say, I want kids to come to know the Lord. That's why your church exists. If you said, well, if we had to narrow down everything, that's the one thing. It's the Great Commission. Now, there's also the discipleship. That's coming up next, but to make disciples, to start the process, to change the hearts of kids. We want to see them learn how to navigate and better understand the Bible. Biblical illiteracy is surging, unfortunately. And if they're adults now, it means 20 years ago, folks in our shoes didn't do such a good job teaching them how to navigate the Bible. So that's another reason we're into children's ministry. We want to observe growth in their relationship with God. There's nothing more powerful as a kids leader to see a kid articulate their faith or to tell and unpack a Bible story in front of other kids and just to see them grow and tell their parents about Jesus. I mean, it's a powerful thing. So we want to see spiritual growth in their discipleship. And we want to see them engage their culture and change the world. Kids are the best disciplers of their friends and other kids. They're the best evangelists. They can do our job for us. If you have a kid that falls deeply in love with Jesus as a youngster and we keep that fire alive, it's amazing the impact they can have before they even reach adulthood. And then finally, we want to know that our time with them is only a catalyst or a supplement to the thriving faith with the family. Traditionally, Sunday school teachers have carried the mantle of spiritual wisdom, but it should have always been the case that they were the backup to what happens at home. So many would say that children's ministry's changed and now the mantle's being taken away. No, we still hold the mantle. I mean, we're here consistently. We prepare the lesson and teach the kids, but another layer has been added that at some point was never addressed, or maybe it needs to be addressed because of culture. Parents need to disciple their kids at home. And so there's other speakers here too that we share the same view. Like, I have a great passion for kids and kids ministry, but I'm probably more passionate now about leading parents because I can only do so much with the kids. And I don't want to lead a kid to Christ and send him home and where he's getting nothing there. And he becomes dependent on me or even the church to be a spiritual leader. So I want to lead parents well. So those are 5 whys. And what's at stake in the midst of this? Lifeway Research has done some very unsettling research. It says that less than 20, now this is, I want to qualify this. When I say Christian, I mean a Christ follower. I don't even say Christian when I'm writing a blog or an article or preaching. I say Christ follower because it implies action. It implies an active faith. Are you a Christ follower? That's a different question than are you a Christian? Because are you a Christian means, well, I'm not Muslim. I'm in the United States. Yeah, I guess I am. So for the sake of the interview, we interviewed people that went to church regularly and said they were Christians. So we don't know. You never know, but they said they were. Less than 25% read their Bible regularly. Less than 25% of people that attend a church regularly read their Bible more than once a week, and that once a week is usually at church. Less than 25% of Christian adults share their faith. Less than half have ever led somebody else to Jesus. 20% of Christians believe that there is a means of salvation other than Christ. In other words, they contradict themselves in their own definition of who they are. I'm a Christian, but you know what? You don't have to be. And so that's alarming. And all of our adults that believe this were at some point regular church attending kids. So all of this is at stake because we truly want families to walk together in obedience to Deuteronomy 6 and Deuteronomy 11 that talks about the day in the life of a family. You guys are the best hope that that happens. So let's talk through it. I'm going to give you, now I do happen to know that you guys use a gospel project, and I've done this breakout at conferences, and it's a, after the conference, I mean, just texts and emails like, this has worked for us. But I usually say, hey, find out what comes with your curriculum. I happen to know you use the gospel project, so I'm going to show you the things that come with a gospel project, especially the next go-around. You guys are relaunching it this spring. It's gotten even better. It's the most popular curriculum Lifeway's ever created. In just 3.5 years, we have over 12,000 churches using it. It's the fastest growing and the most popular. My wife and I use it at our church. Love it. So I'm not trying to sell you on it because you're already using it, but I'm telling you, I love it, and I love what comes with it. So become familiar with every tool that comes with the gospel project. I'll try to go through these quickly. You may or may not know of them. The apps are killer. Now, up until this point, you've had to pay for it. Starting this past fall, I was like, I don't want to have a guest come to my church and say, oh, here's an app, $1.99 every 3 months. So I said, we've got to extract what we think is worth charging for. There's a video that's in there because it's got proprietary music in there. We have to charge for it. But the app has become free. We've just taken the Storyteller video out. So it's got a game on there. It's got the gospel presentation. It has a summary of the Bible story. It has the question that the parents can ask their kids. And if they want to do the in-app upgrade, it's 99 cents for a small device, $1.99 for a larger device, and they get the videos of the Bible stories. And they're really well done this year. So that's the app. And I'll talk in a little bit about knowing that app is out there is not the same as getting your parents to download it. We'll get to that. Right now we're just going over these things. That's a whole nother level of effort. The next thing that you should be aware of, and you guys can look into this. I think somebody on your staff is looking into this. Lifeway produces devotionals, and they're daily devotionals, but in those devotionals are devotionals every week that tie in with the curriculum. So there's two every week, at least. We have three curriculum lines, so at least two devotionals every week tie in with the content from the Gospel Project. You probably can skip that because I don't think you guys are going to invest in that. It's a whole other investment of devotionals. And a church your size will be spending a lot of money to get those. The next one that you do have and comes with your curriculum, music, that's another one. In addition to the music that is provided to you, most of those songs are downloadable on iTunes. We got nominated for a Dove Award this year for this album, and I'll get to this in a little bit. If kids ask their parents to get a song that you sang in church on Sunday, I want you to be able to know where to tell them to go. And so they're on iTunes. They can look up Lifeway Kids on iTunes, and they can download all the songs. And that's what you want. You want to take what happens in church and make sure that it's happening in the home. So make sure you know all the music that comes with your product, that comes with the Gospel Project. These are the ones that are probably the most tangible and the most usable. In fact, we are digital curriculum. We don't get a kit. We download the lessons and print them out. But the one thing I do buy, because I don't want to laminate and cut every week, are the activity cards. They're the little baseball-sized cards, and our kids treat them like trading cards. Like, if they miss a week, they're, like, distraught. We've had kids kind of, like, you know, when you tell a kid's about to lose it because they didn't get one, it's like, okay, oh, no, I'll give you another chance to do the Bible verse, or they were gone the last week. They love them. We've even made little pouches that they keep them in, and if they unpacked the entire, in fact, we started the Gospel Project midway into the second quarter. I gave them all the other cards, so they wouldn't think the Bible starts in Exodus, starts in Genesis. So I gave them all those. And so the parents are like, they put them out on the floor, and the kids are telling their parents what the stories mean. It's amazing. So these are gold. And how you use them is important too. Just giving them out and not addressing what they're to be used for is one thing. Just place them in front of with no interaction. You want your kids to know what they're for, and you want your parents to know what they're for. We're going to get to that. And the last one are the activity sheets. These are different too. We've upgraded these from the curriculum you're using. Now all the activity pages have the Bible story on there with the questions that parents can ask their kids. You'll have parents that are like, okay, I'll read the Bible with my kid. What am I supposed to read? Or okay, I'll talk to him about God. What do I say? Here are the questions. And they relate to what we talked about in church. So hopefully if you did a good job as a teacher, the kids are going to answer those questions truthfully or honestly with their parents. Here's one that is, I encourage you highly. Who has seen the Gospel Project video? It's a 5-minute marketing video. The first time I saw it, I had an idea. I wanted a timeline to kind of come to life. So I had our marketing team produce this video. I was like, I want the speaker to be in the middle of the Bible, and all the stories are kind of floating around him. So they did this video, and the first time I saw it, I was bawling. I was like, the Bible would make sense to anybody that had never read it before. They had just seen the Bible in 5 minutes through the eyes of the Gospel Project, and hopefully what we see kids seeing every week. So here's a 5-minute video, and I'm not just playing this for your sake. If you want your parents to know what it is you're teaching their kids, you have permission to put this on your website. You have permission to put this on your Facebook page. We're a small church. I created a Facebook page if you want to look at it later. It's called The Kids at Spring Hill. That's the name of our ministry. Our church is the Church at Spring Hill. So I created a Facebook page, and it's the first thing on the Facebook page. It says, "Hear what we're teaching your kids. Here's what you're teaching your kids." And almost all of our parents, all 15 of the families, it's not a lot, but they all went there and all saw the video. Could tell because they all liked it. Put this on your page so your parents are going to know, okay, I get it. I see what you're trying to teach my kids. So here we go eventually. Boop. Here's the media. And it will start any moment. We got volume up. Okay, awesome. And here we go. I'm going to sit down with you guys and watch it. Ah, I'm a loser. I just need to be patient. There we go.
The Bible is an amazing book. It's not just a collection of stories. It's one big story where everything points to Jesus. It begins with God creating a perfect world and placing a perfect couple in the middle of it. But Adam and Eve disobeyed God, and sin and death entered the world. God decided to judge the earth by sending a great flood, but he told Noah to build an ark so the animals and Noah's family could be saved. One of Noah's descendants was a man named Abraham. God promised Abraham that his family would be used to bless the whole world. The Israelites would have a special land to live in and would be as countless as the stars in the sky. When a famine spread through the land, God used Joseph to bring the Israelites to Egypt. But after a time, the Egyptians made them their slaves. So God raised up another leader, Moses, to rescue his people and lead them to the promised land. God performed amazing miracles along the way. He taught the Israelites how to live. He showed them how to build a tent called the tabernacle, where sacrifices could be offered for their sins. But even after they arrived in the promised land, the Israelites continued to rebel. They worshiped idols and demanded a human king instead of God. God was patient and allowed them to have a king. One of those kings was David, who defeated Goliath. David's son Solomon built a beautiful temple for God that replaced the tabernacle, but Solomon's sin caused the kingdom to be split in two. During this difficult time, prophets like Isaiah told the people about the Messiah. The Messiah would make things right with God again. Even when the Israelites were conquered by other kingdoms, they held on to the promise that one day the Messiah would come and rescue them. In time, God led the Israelites back to the land. The temple was rebuilt. Jerusalem's walls were repaired. The prophet Malachi foretold that the Messiah was on the way. Then, silence. For 400 years, God remained quiet. The silence was broken by the cry of a tiny baby born in a manger. His name was Jesus. Jesus was the Messiah. He lived a sinless life, performed miracles, and showed the people how to return to God again. Some believed Jesus, most did not. He was arrested and crucified on a cross. And then something amazing happened. 3 days after his death, Jesus came to life again, conquering death and defeating sin once and for all. At the beginning, we said that all of the Bible points to Jesus. So you might think it's strange that he appears so late in the story. Or does he? Look closely, and you'll find signs that point to Jesus right from the very beginning. God used the ark to save Noah, pointing to the day when we would find salvation in Jesus. God promised to bless the world through Abraham's family, which he did through Jesus. The sacrifices pointed to Jesus, who became the ultimate sacrifice for our sin. The pages of the Bible are filled with stories that point us to Jesus. But the story doesn't end there. Jesus' friends carried his message to the ends of the earth. Faithful followers like Peter, Paul, and others shared the good news wherever they went. And you and I have the same calling. We are to share Jesus wherever we go until one day he returns to make everything right again. Yes, the Bible is full of amazing stories, but really, it's all about Jesus. That's the story. That's his story.
Wow. So imagine a parent comes up to you after class and says, "Now, what are you teaching the kids?" You're like, "Check out the Facebook page." Boop. You just send it. I mean, they go there and they watch that at home. And that's really, it summarizes everything we want to teach our kids. We're not. I know the theology of your church. I know Greg, too. And you believe that the Bible is not a bunch of morality tales. We don't read David and Goliath just to learn how to be courageous. We read David and Goliath to see the faithfulness of God coming through to rescue his people. We look at all the stories that were just mentioned there. That's what you're about here. And so this has been a gospel project-centered section. I'm going to keep going on because I want to just tell you, I'm grateful that you guys use the gospel project. I love it. That's what my wife and I use in our church. This applies to whatever it is you're doing with the kids on Sunday morning. Hopefully, you're doing something that is gospel-centered, that's leading kids to the Lord. But from this point on, it's really about you communicating what it is you do and what it is you feel like parents should do. So before you feel like I'm here selling Gospel Project because you guys already used it, I'm not. Whatever you use, do this with your parents. So let's talk through. That's number 10, was find out all the stuff that comes to your curriculum. I just gave you most of it in a nutshell. Number 8. Make the physical parts or the physical things of that. Consider how to best utilize. Oh, sorry, I was skipping. Number 9, consider how to best utilize drop-off or pick-up queue area. Do you have posters up that while there's a line there of parents, they can see what you just taught? Is it updated? There's sort of a unit view, but we have a different picture for every week. Put that picture up. Or if you use video screens, which I've seen a lot more of that than paper around here, use video screens to show the parents so while they're waiting in line, they can see what you talked about. Magazine racks, brochure holders. Every guest family we have gets a letter from my wife, and it has a summary of the Gospel Project, but it also tells them what we covered that weekend. So if they're a guest, they can see it on that piece of paper they're given. Make sure you have all the okay, now that's one thing. The drop-off area's got to be set up for that. Make those physical things available at the point of pickup. There were times on Sunday mornings at my last church when my wife and I noticed that the parents weren't interacting with them. It was like, check the tag, you got the right kid, okay, here's the paper, see you next week. We weren't interacting at all. And there were some weeks when the staff forgot to copy the things because we really hadn't journeyed through this together. I was the director of LifeWay Kids as a volunteer in my kids' ministry, so they're sometimes intimidated. But I'm like, you have to give these things to your leaders or our parents walk away with no idea what we talked about, because we're not talking to them about it. So make that stuff. I do it before I do the lessons for kids. I copy the take-home pages first. I make sure I have all my cards. I put them right by the door where the parents are going to be. Then I take care of what I'm doing with the kids. I mean, that really is more important to me because I could blow it with the kids. At least I know they're with us for an hour, some of you, 3 hours or more on the weekend. They're with the parents all week. Please give the parents and make it available right there at the door wherever the kids are picked up. Some of you guys, by the way, don't see parents because kids are there all morning. I know that, but we'll talk about that later. That was a question that came up. The last leaders to have the kids and hand them off need to make sure this happens. Number seven, have demos inside of the digital or non-physical things. So play the music that you did that morning on the radio or on your boombox or on the TV. You can play it from DVD and turn the video down or whatever and hear the music. We pipe some in the hallway sometimes. So the parents hear the music that we did, and occasionally the kids will say, "Mom, we did the song. Can you download it on iTunes?" And you go, "Oh, sure, right here," because you're already prepared. So you know where they can get those songs. Have your devices with the free app so you can show them how easy it is to download. One church that we did this at last year got a, it wasn't this big, they got a widescreen TV and they flipped it sideways and they connected their iPad to it and it was a life-size version of the app. So the parents that were in line, the leader was like, "Y'all got to get this app, man, check it out." And they would do this and it would click and it was a touchscreen, of course, and it would expand and the parents were like, "I want that." And like, "Can't have the TV, but you can download the app for free." So have those things in place so your parents can see them. And I just want to warn you, your parents are still not going to download the app as much as you'd like them to. My wife and I tested the gospel project at our last church on a Wednesday night class to see if we wanted to use it for the whole curriculum. And in the course of 13 weeks, we had about 15 kids. So that was about 12 families. And out of the 12 families, only half of them had downloaded. And I said it every week. "You got the free app yet?" They thought I was crazy. By the end, only half the families had downloaded it. It's just the way it is. It's okay. But just do your job and make sure that they know it's available. We started baiting the kids, like, "Don't let your parents get in the car until they download it." We got some emails. Program the type of activities during pickup. Okay, this is one of the key things. I'm going to give you in a minute two things you can do if you forget everything else. But this is critical. Program in the type of activities during pickup time that engage, this is important, engage kids collectively so that leaders can engage parents individually. So you're going to have to make sure you and the other leaders are on the same page. When we're in our class time and the first parent shows up, we're like, "All right, guys, we're done." I make eye contact with the other leader because we've already talked about this in advance. He engages all the kids in a group activity, and we look like we have our act together because there's not kids swinging off the ceiling and stuff. Parents love when they show up and see that. The kids are doing, usually it's memory verse time, Bible verse time, and they look like we got our act together because I got one leader and maybe a teen helper. They're handling that. My sole responsibility is the parents now. Like he said today in the main session, you look in their eyes, you say, "Hey, how's it going? Can we pray for you? Hadn't seen you in a few weeks." For us, we're only in our second week of church, so I can never say that. But you know, it might happen because you're the person at the door that, okay, it's been mom and dad for a while, but now just mom is showing up because you've been focusing on that. You notice that, and you know something's going on, and maybe that's why this kid's been acting like that. So there's things like that. When you release yourself from the kids and your sole purpose is to connect with the adults. And our last church, we had four leaders. We had about 20, I think our class had 26 kindergartners. We taught kindergartners. We had four adult leaders and two teens. At the end of class, we had enough leaders that they would all split the group into two over here with the leaders. And me and my wife would tag team that line and work the parents. I mean, like, "Hey, how are you guys doing?" We'd get to know almost all of them. And after 3 or 4 weeks, we knew almost every parent by name. So you have to plan something at the end of class that allows you to do that. If you're the teacher and you're still teaching and you have a leader that's not really comfortable talking to all the parents, then you need to figure out how to make that transition at the end so you can, your most confident communicators can do that and talk to parents. And here's what needs to happen during that time. Okay, if you forget everything else, two things that I hope happens to your church in the process of this. Based on two facts, parents don't read the Bible with their kids regularly, and they don't pray with their kids regularly. There are exceptions, but by far, and listen, I've a lot of babies in here, it's going to be hard to put into a rhythm. Start it before your kids even really understand what you're saying, then they're going to be totally used to it when they start comprehending language. Make it a pattern in your life, because if it's not a pattern, it's really hard to fit it in later. And virtually every parent I know, including those that have been going to church all of their lives, don't pray with their kids regularly, and they don't read the Bible with their kids regularly. I know this because I've struggled with this as a dad. it's hard for our whole family to do it. One of my wife or I either do it. And you also, if you ask parents, they would say, yeah, I pray with my kids all the time. God is great. God is good. Let us thank him for our food. By his hands we're all fed. Give us Lord daily bread. Amen. Take out the mealtime prayer. How many times do you pray with your kids? You find out what's going on in their life, and it's rare. So of everything else you get out of this workshop, I want your parents to hear you say two things to them. Pray with your kids and read the Bible with your kids. How do you do that without making them feel like you're judging them? Judge internally, externally, here's what you can say. Here are some phrases. So you make these your own language. My wife and I did these. We tried these out. And when we said them, we got the glazed in the eyes look like, I'm not doing that with my kids. We could tell. Here's one of them. Hey, we had a great time. I'll give you an example. This past weekend, we talked about Moses and the golden calf. But we played a game where the kids had to put a gold star on each other's calves. And we just wanted to explain that that's not what it meant. But so we said, hey, today we talked about the golden calf. Here's a great way for you to lead at home this week as you put the card in their hand. We'll be following up with it right here next week. You've just told them you're going to be accountable for this a little bit. Without saying you're going to be accountable for this, hey, we're going to follow up with you next week. They've just heard you, who is a representative of Jesus as a part of the body of Christ, tell them they have some responsibility at home without going, do you pray with your kids? Do you read the Bible with your kids? Because then they're going to have to lie in front of their children. So here's a good one just to kind of take the pressure off, but it communicates the same thing. This one is powerful. Hey, when you guys read the Bible together this week, here's a story. I don't know what you're reading during your family's Bible time, but here's the story that we did this weekend. And it's, I don't even know if you know what questions to ask your kids, but there's three questions right here you can ask them. In fact, we learned on finding the story in the Bible. I bet your kid can help you find that story in the Bible. So your parents have just heard you say, I need to read the Bible with my kids this week. And so that's very important for them to hear. Here's one. When you guys pray together this week, you can focus on this aspect of faithfulness, because we're talking about Moses, God's faithfulness. We're going to be talking about Jesus and faithfulness for the next few weeks now. Again, they're hearing you say, you need to pray with their kids. If they do it, they're going to appreciate the partnership, and you're affirming what they do, and they're still going to continue, hopefully, to see themselves as the spiritual leaders. If they're not doing it, hopefully the Holy Spirit will convict them. But you have to be the one that's the voice of that. God will speak, the Holy Spirit will speak to them, but it may be literally through your words that causes that to happen. So please don't take that for granted, these phrases. And here's one more. And this is great. And if you've ever asked kids to pray, it's like rolling the dice. We got a kid that's like, my lizard died this week, or my grandmother has cancer. I mean, the kids are like, this kid, that's just as important. But in either case, when that parent picks the kid up, you can say, hey, is everything okay? I heard your mom might be going through some stuff. And you've just made a deep relational connection, and you're going to journey with that family and that deal. Now, if you don't see those parents, pass that information on to the next teacher that does, so that it does get communicated to the family. And you can say, so-and-so's been asking some great questions about this. If we can help you in any way, please let us know. We'd love to pray for you. We'd love to keep in touch as you guys are growing together in your faith as a family. Those words mean so much. Those parents will hear you say to them and you're going to do it. And you're like, have we said this every week? I hope so. It took us weeks before we started. 3 weeks in, we're like, do they think we're crazy because we say this every week? And about 4 or 5 weeks in, after we tried this out at our last church, because we realized our leaders were just like handing them a piece of paper and checking the tags. That was it. Check the tag, give them the bag. That's a good saying to use. That's what we do. But we should go deeper than that. After 4 or 5 weeks, we had a mom come up to us that had been going to church all her life, and she was in tears. She's like, we've never prayed together. Her kids weren't that old, but still 9, 10 years old. We've been going to church here all our lives, and we've never prayed together. Thank you for telling us we need to do that. We didn't tell them they needed to do that. We assumed they were, and our language communicated that they should, and the Holy Spirit told them they should. But that's how it works. You are representatives of God. The Holy Spirit will speak to people's hearts because of what you say and because of how you take the authority to lead them. And you are all given authority, no matter how old you are, even if you don't have kids, even if you have young children. You have been given the authority on Sunday morning to lead not only the kids in your care, but to guide their parents and equip their parents. So these phrases, and you guys can come up with some as a team. I've already talked to your leadership. You can even, as a group of leaders and teachers, come up with these. But do have something. My wife and I would, on one Sunday, we would say, hey, when you guys read the Bible this week, and then the next week it would be, hey, when you guys pray together. So we wouldn't like do the same. We wouldn't do four every week. We just like pick a question, and every parent got that. Or we would all turn in line so we wouldn't sound like a broken record as the parents are lined up. It'd be like, you're like a salesman for Jesus. So here's one. Utilize other parents that you know are walking with the Lord that are engaged in your ministry. In some cases, they may actually be serving in other ministries. So I know everybody wants to get home on Sundays, but if you could talk to those parents and say, hey, I think that couple is new. Do you think you could get next to them in line? Because, you know, in line, sometimes the lines are not that quick. They may be in line for a minute or two. That's a great opportunity for a connected church family to have a conversation with a new or guest or people you just don't recognize, find out where they're from, get to know them, and then they can introduce you to that family as like they're already got a friendship going there. Now you're brought into the circle. So utilize those families and each other, because a lot of you have kids. If you're picking up your kids, from another classroom and you're in line with a family you don't recognize, get to know that family a little bit on behalf of your teacher and then introduce them to the teacher who has your kids. So you guys help each other out there. Your staff and some of your key leaders that may not be sitting with kids, like I facilitate our large group sometime and our small group, but I'm not always teaching the kids on the floor with them. And so I would probably be the one out in the hallway as parents are checking in. We have a new church, so almost everybody's new. Somebody needs to see all of the newbies. That you can sometimes tell by their tags, because you also want to make sure that you're there waiting for them when they pick their kids up to have that conversation and to follow up with them if possible. But that doesn't happen if class is over. It sometimes can be chaotic. That person is there with them at the check-in, or at least observes it happening and then perhaps gives you the heads up. Number two, and I've already mentioned this, so I'll just mention it. Assume that everyone is wanting help with how to lead their kids, and everybody is. I got four kids. I wanted to graduate from high school in a couple of years. I still need help. I don't get offended when a teacher says, hey, you know, if you do this with your kids, I mean, I hopefully if pride doesn't well up, I won't go, you don't even have kids, what do you know? I mean, there's something about a Sunday school teacher that it's like I send my kids to a soccer coach because I'm not good at it. I don't want them to learn how to play soccer. I send them to a piano lesson if I want them. So there's something about the authority, perhaps too much in our culture, that you're the God experts. It should happen at home. But people do feel like you have authority in their life. And so you do have that authority. You're Sunday school teachers. What do you call your life Bible study? Okay. I heard that said several times tonight. Same difference. And then finally, in the two workshops tonight, it's probably not even half of your team. So there's going to be half of you that are like crazy all of a sudden. You guys are going to be like, oh, you got to do this after class. And be like, what are you talking about? Just give them just check the tag. Make sure they got the right kid. You've got to preach this to the rest of your team, at least everybody in each of your groups. So it doesn't necessarily have to permeate the whole ministry. I hope it does. But in your classrooms, make sure that you're nailing this. And then the third thing I want you to do tonight, I talked about at the beginning, I want to inspire you and give you the tools. The third thing is that I've got to remind you how difficult it's going to be, because you'll do this for a couple of months and you'll see some quick results, and then you're going to have to remind yourself in 3 months, this has to be about leading the parents as much as it is leading the kids. As you recruit new people to children's ministry, you're recruiting them to lead kids, and then you're saying, oh, by the way, we really have to lead their parents. They're like, wait, I didn't sign up for that. I just want to roll on the floor with kids. You have to remind new leaders coming on board, as it gets easier to do the things focused on the kids and go, oh, yeah, we got to greet the parents at the door, you're going to have to constantly remind yourselves what is most important. I gave my life to Christ as a 17-year-old. I graduated from high school, gave my life to Christ, went off to college, never had anybody. I actually was placed in, God placed me in the dorm right next to, literally the next room, the only other believer in the entire dorm. And I'd only been a believer for a couple months. I heard him, it was Berklee College of Music, so he was playing an Amy Grant song one night back when she was the only one that you could listen to. And I was like, she was on the radio, but I was like, he's got to be a believer. And I knocked on the door, and a guy put me next to him. We've been best friends. He actually oversees our music now at Lifeway Kids. He's a good friend. God did that, and I stumbled for several years because nobody, Scott was the first person that I didn't know what a devotional life was. I was like, you read the Bible every day? I was like, do you have to do that? It's more of a theological question, like, am I going to go to hell if I don't? He's like, well, do you want to do that? I was like, yeah, I kind of do. If I'd had somebody at a younger age, I may have come to Christ earlier, but at least when I first made the decision, had somebody just the first few months or years say, here's what you need to do in your life to walk with the Lord. What if that had been my mom or dad? My dad's an atheist, my mom's an agnostic, but what if somebody in my family was on that journey with me? It would have had a profound impact on my life. I struggled for 10 years in my faith because I had no discipleship, no guidance. I didn't even know what I thought a disciple was the person that made the decision, not one who was in the process of being discipled. If your kids are getting this at home, your job is going to be so much easier as a kid's pastor. So I want to close this illustration. You'll feel exhausted in leading, reminding and re-reminding each other through this. The payoff is that families will hear the church leading them and will walk under the conviction of Deuteronomy 6, which is you talk about the Lord when you wake up. You talk about the Lord when you eat your meals together. You talk about the Lord when you walk along the road or 5 minutes in the car on the way to school. You talk about the Lord when you lie down at night. In other words, our faith is not the thing that happens in the five-minute conversation in the car on the way home after church. That's the start of the conversation that goes on all week. And if we as leaders don't remind our parents of this, they'll forget it. And we were going to have to remind them every week. Our role as leaders must go beyond our calling to lead kids and go straight into the home to equip parents to take the lead. Dozens of components at the beginning of the race. They don't ensure that the runner is going to win. But most experts in training will tell you that if they don't do it right, the race is over, that they're probably not going to win. And so it's critical, and it's such a small part of that 10-second race, which is such a small part of sports. So that 30 seconds might seem insignificant, but it can determine whether or not a child has the right start to a spiritual journey. And that's Usain Bolt, fastest human being to ever live. And he's said on many occasions that he knows within the first second of a race whether or not he's going to win it based on how he starts. And this is a 10-second race stretched over 1 minute. So it's kind of cool to watch. The small 30-second window could very well transform the lives of your children and your interaction with your parents. Thank you guys so much for your time. And if you want to check out a really small version of this, we did a podcast last year. The URL is up there, but it's just easier to Google Lifeway Kids 30 seconds. And the podcast is about 20 minutes. It's a condensed version of this. It'll come up. But also we're recording this so you can listen to it again or pass it on to your other leaders. But you got to carry the flame. You got to carry that torch for your other folks. Thank y'all. Any questions? Oh, yeah, let's do this. We got a little gift card, so I want to do a little. Raise your hand if you've served kids in children's ministry more than 5 years. Okay, keep them up. If you've served more than 10 years, keep them up. I'm starting to get to where some of you weren't even born at that time. Okay, I'm just going to go up now 1 year at a time. If you've served kids more than 12 years, you probably have to remember the date because we're going to get specific here. Also, don't lie either. I know you want it, the gift card. If you've served kids more than 15 years, keep your hand up. I can't split this either. If there's a tie, y'all are going to have to take each other out to dessert. More than 20 years, anyone? I got to go back 16. No, children's ministry. You've been ministering to kids. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you. It just makes my job easier. So $10 gift card to Maggiano's is my favorite on that card. So wherever you want to go, that will barely buy dessert at Maggiano's, but it is a gift card. Yes. Thank you guys so much for serving kids. I'd love to interact online. I'm on Twitter. I'm pretty constantly tweeting about stuff like this to remind leaders of why we do what we do, to encourage leaders to connect with parents. So if you follow me on Twitter, you'll get those. And I love to interact on Facebook. You can connect with us anytime at Lifeway Kids, but I'd love to interact with you. But I'll have a special place for this church.